is a Monday drive where the big news of the day, and it's very rare I could say this, local breaking news in Major League Baseball. The AAA Charlotte Knights, they put out a statement revealing they were in touch with the Toronto Blue Jays early last week to potentially play Toronto's home games in the Queen City. This is because the Canadian federal government ruled the Blue Jays were not welcome to do so at their normal home. And obviously that'd be terrific for the city if they were picked over Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and the team's spring training home in Florida. But what about Charlotte as a full-time home for a big league team? A few years ago, I was chatting with a few leaders in Charlotte, and they figured, in terms of sports, pursuing a sports franchise to come to the Queen City, they could go after pro soccer or Major League Baseball, but not both. And when David Tepper arrived on the scene, he obviously prioritized soccer. Charlotte MLS will announce its official team name on Wednesday. Last week, we learned its inaugural season that was originally set for 2021 will be pushed back to 2022. And as much as I love my Orioles and the majors, from a strictly business perspective, pursuing MLS is a smarter investment than Major League Baseball. I asked this question on social media. It's the same one I'll ask you right now. At Josh Graham Radio, you can follow me there, at Sports Sub Triad. What would you rather have in Charlotte, an MLS franchise or a Major League franchise? 79% of the audience says a Major League franchise. And if I'm being honest, I'm emotionally attached to baseball in a way I'm not soccer, even though I grew up playing both sports, and I'm somebody who likes watching soccer. Not a big fan of watching club soccer overseas, but I'll watch some MLS, and I'll certainly watch American international soccer. But I want you to put a business hat on here. I want you to remove your emotional attachment to the sports and think about these sports as assets, as stocks, if you will. Pursuing MLS is a smarter investment. It's a lower risk for one. Far cheaper. Like, the average value of a major league team is $1.8 billion. The average value, this is, I think, according to Forbes last November, of an MLS team, $346 million. So, major league teams are worth five times as much as an MLS team. David Tepper paid $325 million to get his expansion team. That is $125 million more than the other two expansion cities, what they had to pay last year. So it's cheaper to get into the game. Baseball, it's trending downward. To younger people, they're not interested sitting around for 3.5 hours for a game with very little action. It's too long. Younger people particularly have lessening attention spans. In 2017, Gallup, which has been charting things for the last 50, 60 years, sports fandom in America, found that Major League Baseball has become the third most popular sport among Americans. What was seen to be the pastime, third most popular sport, just passed by basketball. Less than 10% of Americans. This is something that's never happened before since Gallup's been charting this. Less than 10% of Americans say it's their favorite sport. It's at 9%. Conversely, there's a higher reward with MLS. It's trending upward. While we're talking about that Gallup poll, how baseball is going downward, MLS just passed, or I should say soccer, just passed hockey as the fourth most popular sport. So it's gaining on baseball. Baseball fans, there are 9% in America that say that that's their favorite sport. Now there's 7% for soccer. That's how close it is. There are more kids in America that play soccer than play baseball. It passed hockey. Now it's gaining on baseball. So it's going in another direction. It's cheaper, and there's a higher potential for what it might be in the future. Think about the attention span for younger people, as we've been noting. It's 2 hours long. There's minimal stoppages. How can you not get behind that? FIFA, very popular video game. As a youth sport, soccer, as I mentioned, very popular. So this was bound to happen. We're seeing it happen a lot slower than we thought it would, but soccer is continuing its upward trend. Then there's the international opportunity. This is the reason why I think Tepper has FC on every single one of these names that's put out there. Even though I'm not a fan of it, I can understand this line of thinking. You got a digital product that says between two pints. You want things to appeal to the same people who are watching English Premier League soccer. Once the MLS becomes respectable to those overseas, in Spain, in the EPL, dare I say, Robert, in Italy, in Serie A, there will be global marketing opportunities, just not possible for baseball, maybe outside of Japan or China. I'm still waiting for an American star to take the World Cup by storm. Maybe it's Christian Pulisic, who's been great for Chelsea. When that happens, if he's playing for an American club, MLS, there's a chance for growth there. There's a chance for global marketing that you just don't have with baseball. So while I would probably answer that question, like most of the audience, I'd prefer to have a major league team because one of the few teams I root for is a major league team. It's the Orioles. I have emotional attachment to that sport. I do believe the MLS, it's a smarter business option. It's a smarter business investment wherever you are, especially by David Tepper in Charlotte. 336-777-1600, the number on Twitter at SportsUpTriant if you would like to chime in. Let's go to Wayne in Greensboro. Wayne, what do you want? What do you prefer? City of Charlotte, baseball or soccer? What do you think makes more sense from a business perspective?
Well, I think baseball does, but I'm going to throw out there that the Triangle would be a better spot than Charlotte. Charlotte already has a lot of, you've just got so much discretionary income. And I think Raleigh would be perfect. You could build a brand new stadium out near where the fairgrounds are and PNC is. And from what I understand, the AAA park in Charlotte is not expandable to major league specs. It's just not something you can do. So that it just doesn't make sense in Charlotte. But I think in Raleigh or in the Triangle somewhere, you can build it out there where people from Greensboro and surrounding areas could take the many interstates to go in there and get to a weekday game a little better.
Well, let me ask you this, Wayne. What do you object to that I'm saying, though? I agree it would be great to have more pro sports in the state of North Carolina, but why baseball over Major League Soccer?
I just think, you know, as far as the youth, they've embraced soccer for a long while now, not just recently. It's been like 30 years, and it's grown very little nationally. I'm biased. I'm one of those who would rather go out and watch my grass grow before I'd watch a soccer.
and I'm right along with you, except I like soccer, but I would prefer baseball over soccer. Thanks for the phone call, Wayne. It's appreciated.
Thank you.
336-777-1600 is the phone number. We're on Twitter at SportsUpTryant. A good point that he brings up there. Truist Ballpark, that's what it's called now. Just like there's name changes in Winston-Salem for Wake's Football Stadium and also the Winston-Salem Dashes Ballpark, it holds 10,200 fans with 22 suites. That's way too small for a major league park. Most major league stadiums, for those who don't know, it's between probably 40 and 50,000. I've seen some that are probably around 35, though. You want to compact it with a lot of suite space, between 60, 70, maybe 80 suites available. It's possible to expand that ballpark, just not to the degree where it would meet most minimums at other major league stadiums. So there's probably going to have to be a lot of work done, but it's a tremendous location that they have there. I think Charlotte, actually I know this, Charlotte is a bigger city than Raleigh. Charlotte is a pro sports town, so I think it would be a better fit than in Charlotte than in Raleigh, but I'm willing to hear both arguments to that.
Stand by as we continue our dig for the truth and the toy at the bottom of the cereal box.
Oh, got it.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham on Sports Hub Triad.
Robert, wasn't it Toby Keith you told me ended one of your relationships?
Yeah, she did not like Toby, so she had got to go.
I'm interested, on Twitter, at SportsUpTriad, has that ever happened to you with any other artist? Like, I imagine if Sarah Bradford says she didn't like Coldplay,
that might be a deal breaker. Yeah, get out of here.
It just might be. I don't know. I didn't prep Ryan McGee for this, but maybe we'll get to this in a second. Ryan McGee made news headlines this weekend talking to Ed Orgeron on the Marty and McGee radio show, and Coach O's, I think, general sentiment was he has no doubt they're going to be playing the season this year. He says his team will be ready whenever that is. But before we get to that, if, let's say hypothetically, the woman you're now married to said early on in the infancy stages of Ryan McGee's relationship, country music singer X cannot be a fan of yours. I can't hear that in the house. Would that be a deal breaker for Ryan McGee?
No. If you ever seen a picture of my wife, then you know that I'm so far out of my league anyway. there wasn't going to be any. So I was obsessed with Tiffany Amber Thiessen, like back in the Saved by the Bell days, and all of my friends that I worked with way back when. When I got married, they all just started laughing because I basically married her, and because my wife looks just like her. And so, yeah, but no, I'm 100% listen to music that I don't like, and I'm pretty sure she does too. But I will say this though: the girl I dated through most of college, the greatest concert experience I ever had and ever will have. I went to see Bruce Springsteen at Rupp Arena my senior year of college, and our seats were awful, like top row all the way across the arena, and we got there too early. I didn't know at the time. Bruce always comes on like 90 minutes late. And this guy walked up, and he wasn't doing this for me. He was doing it for the girl I was dating because she was cute. And he said, "Can I see those tickets?" And I said, and I was like, "Sure." He goes, "These tickets are terrible." He goes, "Here, I'll trade you the ones you have for the ones I have." And they put us on the front row. And we were front row and center for Springsteen. And not only that, he gave me his harmonica, like, before the last encore. Like, it was the most incredible night of my life. And on the way home, driving back from Lexington to Knoxville, Tennessee, you would have thought I had taken her to an accounting convention. Like, she could have carried.
Oh!
He was so loud, and I didn't really like that, and all this other. I'm like, well, you know what? I don't think this is going to work. And it didn't.
Shoot him a follow on Twitter at ESPN McGee. Also, keep an eye on the book Sidelines and Bloodlines, a book you wrote about your dad, longtime college football official. I want to talk about that in a bit. It's set to be released on September 15th. Do you agree with Coach O that it's a matter of when, not if, when it comes to college football?
Yeah, I mean, I've said all along, I said all the way back in April, that when, you know, even back when we thought the numbers would be so much better than they are, I thought just to be safe as we flatten the curve, which clearly we haven't, I said all along I thought the season would start later. I didn't think there was any chance the season was going to start on Labor Day weekend. I thought it would start probably in October. And I said all along I didn't know if we'd have a 12-game regular season. I thought it would be shorter than that. And so a lot of those things that I've kind of theorized way back when is where I still think we are. We had Greg Sankey on Marty McGee 2 weekends ago, and what Sankey said, and I honestly think that Coach Orgeron wanted to come on the show to react to what Sankey said, because what Sankey was not as optimistic as Orgeron was, or as a lot of the coaches have been. But he said the reason that, in particular, the ACC and the SEC, who are talking all the time, by the way. There's a back channel of communication between Greensboro and Birmingham. There's no question about it. And what they're doing is, Greg Sankey said, was he was given the advice of a professor at University of South Carolina, a medical professor, who said, take all the time you can possibly take to make a decision. because everything changes so dramatically day to day. And so that's what they're doing. So I still think there'll be some football played. I just don't think it'll be played in every Power 5 conference. And I also think that, I don't think it's going to look the same depending on what region of the country that you're living in. And people are like, well, how does that affect the college football playoff? I don't care. As long as some sort of football is played in the fall, I think it will help everyone. And that's kind of where Coach Ogeron was going. Now, he qualified it by saying he didn't know how long the season was going to be. He didn't know when it was going to start. He didn't know if fans were going to be there. But he just said he believes football was going to be played in some way, shape, or form.
The book, Sidelines and Bloodlines, it's going to be released on September 15th. It's about Ryan McGee and his dad and his dad's experiences as being a college football referee. And I think anybody has kind of the experience, or I'd say most people who are lucky enough have the experience where their dad tells stories all the time that become repetitive. With me, my dad always loves telling old stories about how he got behind-the-scenes access to the Iron Sheik, Hulk Hogan, and stuff like that, yeah. Because he was close friends. I didn't learn this until the middle of life, that my dad was close family friends with Macho Man Randy Savage. Actual thing that I looked through photos, and I saw a picture of Macho Man Randy Savage in our foyer, and I said, Dad, is this Photoshop? He said, no, him and Miss Elizabeth, when they came into Baltimore, I would pick him up from the airport, and I wasn't allowed to tell anybody that he was at my house, and he'd take me behind the scenes and take me to matches, and I didn't realize that my dad was kind of underselling it until I had Lanny Poffo on the radio, and he ended our conversation saying, your dad did the impossible. He befriended the Macho Man.
Wow. No, that's the best. Well, and that's what, so this book, and I appreciate you mentioning it, Sidelines and Bloodlines, you know, is co-authored with my dad and my brother. And my brother's an attorney here in Charlotte. He's way smarter than me. He went to Yale Law School and went to Wake Forest undergrad. And then my dad, of course, he was a college football official for 40 years and was in the ACC for most of his career in big-time college football. He went to the Big East for a little bit when they started that, but then came back. And so, man, it is a Tobacco Road book. I mean, there's so much about the ACC in there, and almost all of Dad's stories, and not only that, but like his first college football game was at Guilford. And him, what was amazing to me is I'd heard all the stories and had lived a lot of the stories in the ACC and the Big East and the Rose Bowl and the Orange Bowl and Army-Navy game and all that stuff. But his best stories were from, like, working high school games in Wadesboro or working small college games, you know, Emory and Henry and Guilford, or going to Carson Newman and they had to change clothes in the hotel, in the motel, rather, in Tennessee. And they forgot to reserve a room, and so the motel manager said, well, y'all can go in here and change clothes, and it was the room where they stored all the mattresses, and it was full of feathers. So when they walked out onto the field to officiate the game at Carson Newman, they were just covered. Look, they'd been tarred and feathered before they walked out there. So the stories are just off the chart, and if anybody's ever wondered, you know, my dad was a field judge. He was on the sideline his whole career. So if you've ever wondered what the head coach was saying to the referee, and what the official was saying back to the head coach, and did they ever have a big fight? Those are the stories that Dad tells, and the answer is yes to all of the above.
We'll have to get to more of those on the next visit, but you're the biggest. Ryan McGee's with us from ESPN. You're one of the biggest Charlotte Knights baseball fans and just fans of minor league baseball that I know out there. You're a season ticket holder for the Knights, and the big news today, the Knights put out a statement saying they've been in touch with the Toronto Blue Jays to temporarily have, potentially, the Knights ballpark be the home for the Blue Jays because the federal government in Canada ruled that they can't play games there. They can't have American teams fly in when baseball restarts later on this week. I'm less interested in the temporary of what could happen and more interested in this state as a baseball market, because the MLS is coming in 2022. David Tepper really pushing heavily for that since he was hired or since he bought the Carolina Panthers a few years ago. It doesn't seem like to me, with the college sports priorities that we have that makes our state unique, how many ACC teams we have, and of course ECU and App involved in that as well, and also the minor league baseball footprint too, that baseball, Major League Baseball would have a lot of success here, nor would this state really pursue heavily Major League Baseball. What do you think?
Well, I'm torn because just as a baseball fan, and as you say, I mean, you're talking about dad, my family, we have had season tickets for the Charlotte Knights since the mid-90s. And the ballpark where the Knights used to play was down in Fort Mill, you know, just south of Charlotte, just in over in the South Carolina border, and George Shinn owned the team back then. And the old Knights Castle, if you looked at it, that thing, it looked like Arlington Stadium where the Rangers used to play before they put an upper deck on it. And when you walked into the ballpark, it was so overbuilt, and it sat down in this hole. And the reason was because George Shinn's plan was to eventually bring a minor league team to Charlotte, and he tried to make a run at the Expos. And I know Don Beaver tried to do the same in the Greensboro area. And so I'm torn because, you know, in fact, the Charlotte Knights, the only reason it took them so long to build their ballpark in Uptown Charlotte, the great ballpark they have now, is because a local businessman sued and had it blocked because he believed Charlotte should be pursuing a major league team instead of a minor league team. And everyone in Charlotte thought that was a terrible idea because, I mean, it's 81 games. And, you know, you look and see that, I mean, major cities way larger than Charlotte and with a much more baseball-centric population, you know, they have a hard time selling tickets during the week. And so I'm torn because I don't know that it's the right move. I don't know that the state of North Carolina or the Carolinas at all need it. But at the same time, man, it'd be worth a shot, right? And so this might be the perfect compromise if they were to work that out. And they were very early on very aggressive about it because I think a lot of people in baseball had a feeling this might be coming, and the Charlotte Knights got out ahead of it. So we'll see. I mean, you know, I'm telling you right now, I will absolutely I'll suddenly become a baseball beat writer if the Blue Jays are playing, you know, 5 miles from my house. But it's but I'm torn because I would love for it to work, but I don't know that it would.
What's the latest minor league baseball story you can tell us, either as a longtime season ticket holder for the Knights, but what we found a lot of interest in was your summer interning with the Asheville Tourists?
Yeah, well, and you know, we keep talking about the Sidelines and Bloodlines book, you know, available for pre-order now, by the way. And but the next one I want to write, I'm already telling my book agent, is I want to write this Asheville Tourists book. And the summer I work for the Tourists, and if that happens, then I'll be calling you. Because I absolutely 100% am going to need all those stories that you've recorded. Hopefully you guys still have
we'll
that.
We'll write you a foreword or something of the sort. We'll be in there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you, my memory's not as good as I am when I'm telling those stories to you guys. But no, it's I remember that summer '94 was the first year of the Hickory Crawdads, and they had the brand new LP Franz Stadium there on the river, and it's still a great little ballpark. And the Crawdads were a national phenomenon. They thought they were going to get Michael Jordan. In fact, I have a 1994 Hickory Crawdads media guide, and Michael Jordan's bio is in there because they thought there was a chance they might have Jordan. That's the summer that Jordan played baseball. And, of course, we all saw that in The Last Dance. And I remember we sold out all of our home games against the Crawdads preseason because there was a chance that Jordan might be there, and of course he never played Class A ball. But I remember we had the All-Star game in Hickory, and I think I've told you before about the big fight with all the mascots.
Oh yeah.
Before the game, well, there was also later that night, like after the game, you know, they brought in like former South Atlantic League legends in there, and it was like Mudcat Grant, and I think one of the Negroes was there, and they're signing autographs. Well, after the game, we load up in the back of some van, and some guy that worked for the Crawdads, like, I'm going to take you guys to this roadhouse. And we went to a really, really dicey cinder block bar, like 2 o'clock in the morning, somewhere out on the interstate. And, I mean, it was everything about it was questionable, and there's no way it was up to code. But we walk in there, and I don't want to be there. Like, these guys are drunk, and I want to go home, and I want to get back to Asheville. And then, as we're sitting there, and I'm thinking, well, I guess I'm going to be the designated driver because none of these guys can walk, let alone get in the van and drive. I look over at the bar, and Minnie Minoso is sitting at the bar. And I guess he was one of the South Atlantic League legends. And so I walked over to the bar, and I said, are you Minnie Minoso? And he turned around and said, I'm bleeping, 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 bleeping Minnie Minoso. And I said, well, could you sign my ticket? And I have my ticket from the game. And I swear to you, it's Minnie Minoso's signature, but you wouldn't know it because I don't know how much rum they were trying to sell in Hickory, North Carolina that night, but Minnie Minoso drank all of it. And there you go. And before the night was over, and I'm like, all right, boys, let's get in the van. I got to take y'all back to the motel. Minnie Minoso was asleep. He had his face was down on the bar. And I have no idea whatever happened to him that night.
It always delivers. It always does. Oh, man. I can't wait to read the book. I started the Malcolm Gladwell book recently, the newest. And after I'm done that, I need something else. And I think it's going to be Sidelines and Bloodlines. And excited to pick up that book.
And we got to get Dad on the show because he's a better storyteller than I am, and it's his book, and I'm just excited to be able to give him that platform. But yeah, we need to get him on the show because there are great stories in the book, and then there's some that weren't in the book because, in the words of my father, we need a couple key people to die first before we can tell those stories.
We look forward to it, Ryan. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, boys.
There you go. That's Ryan McGee on Twitter at ESPN McGee. That segment went way too long, Robert, but I don't care.
Not one bit.
I don't care at all. Minnie Minoso. every single time, it delivers. In honor of the NBA getting set to restart, I'll list off my top 10 NBA players of the decade. Next. Join B-Dot and I on Instagram Live later on tonight. We're trying something new. 8 o'clock. I do not know what we're going to be talking about for the extent of those 30 minutes, but every time B-Dot's in studio with us for an hour, the hour just blows by and we feel like we could probably do 6 or 7 hours. So I feel like the 30 minutes is going to fly as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk sports, maybe some other stuff as well. So we... last night, asked listeners in the audience to send us some potential topics to cover, and there was one sent that just had me thinking too much today not to include into the radio show. The question, if NBA players, NBA stars were Disney characters, which ones would they be? Of course, all the players are in Disney, so this became like a really just... short, fun exercise where I immediately listed off people, but the moment I got Robert involved in the proceedings, that's when it became really serious, where Robert took exception to some of my characterizations, and then he threw out better examples. So I have about a dozen here that I like, and Robert has a handful too that he's going to throw in here. NBA players, if they were Disney characters... I think you got to go LeBron James being Simba.
I think that's the easiest connection to make.
Leader of the pack, king of the jungle, King James. He's the Lion King. It's Lion King James, if you will. J.R. Smith, same team.
Let's hear it.
Dory from Finding Nemo.
This is one of my favorite ones you did.
He's not going to remember the score. He's not going to remember how many shots of Hennessy he's taken in his bedroom. J.R. Smith, Dory from Finding Nemo.
Just keep shooting. Just keep shooting.
There you go.
Just keep shooting. Yeah, yeah, shooting, yeah. Shooting.
So 336-777-1600 if you want to play along with us here. Do you want to pitch one that you came up with?
Yes, I do. Dwight Howard. Also on the Lakers. We're very Laker-centric right now. I compared him to Forky from Toy Story 4.
Yeah, Forky.
Because he's trash.
Oh, there you go. Keep it together. You got to deliver the jokes well.
Sorry. He's trash.
Yes, he's trash.
He's Forky is made out of like a bunch of different parts. I feel like Dwight doesn't understand what part of his game he should... isolate and use the best. So yeah, Dwight Howard is Forky from Toy Story.
Kawhi Leonard is Goofy. Very distinguishable laugh.
we can agree. Can you do a goofy laugh?
Oh, yuck. I guess something like that.
Wahoo! Yeah, there you go. If you have a good goofy laugh, 777-1600.
Oh, yuck.
Kawhi Leonard is goofy.
So much.
Goofy's kind of he's a bit of a lazy type.
I've never seen Goofy lazy. I feel like they make him do everything.
Goofy, I think he's kind of like the kickback, laid back type. Kawhi is the load management type. So I think there's a good marriage there.
Okay.
This might be the biggest layup of the bunch. LeBron is Simba, pretty easy to come up with. Giannis as Hercules.
Oh yeah. For sure.
Built Greek godlike, if you will. The Greek freak. Giannis is Hercules. Give me another one that you have on your list.
I'm just thinking about this now, but Mike Budenholzer and then his team.
Mike Budenholzer.
Budenholzer. He's his Phil. He is the character that Danny DeVito plays.
Oh, that's right. Mike Budenholzer. He's the horse.
Yeah, I've got
No. He's the guy who's like a centaur.
Yeah. Another one for you here. Russell Westbrook as Gaston.
Wait, you're going to have to explain this one to me. Gaston from Beauty and the Beast?
Yes, he is a large...
Like he's like a villain type, isn't he?
Yes, but see, okay, most people's problem with Russell Westbrook is that he just wants to come in and shoot. He just wants to come in and take the game over. That's all Gaston wants to do. Gaston wants to storm the castle. He wants to kill the beast. He wants to get Belle's hand in marriage, and he's going to do everything in his power to do that. Was Gaston a good leader? No. Is Russell Westbrook a good leader? No. Are they both jacked and athletic freaks who would probably eat 5 dozen eggs, and now they're roughly the size of a barge? Yes. Are there truthers always truthing it up? Yes.
James Harden is Rapunzel just because it's not... The fact that you have long hair can't be the most interesting thing about you.
Right.
You're not very interesting just because your hair is long, Rapunzel, and your hair, your beard being massive, having a massive flow, it's not really that compelling.
Yeah, no one's coming to Houston to rescue you. It's Gaston who's going to show up and just blow the lights out.
There you go. Kevin Durant... I spent a lot of time thinking about this one. I think he's Scar from Lion King.
I can see it.
Because he's mischievous. He's trying to stir things up. He's going to disseminate misinformation via burner account.
I.e. the hyenas.
Yeah, the way that Scar's telling Simba that he's the reason that Mufasa got killed.
Oh, you better get out of here, Simba.
Right. KD... is Scar from Lion King.
I like it.
Joel Embiid.
Who is?
Genie from Aladdin.
Oh, connect the dots. Compare for
all
me.
All powerful, but incredibly limited too because he is shackled by having a point guard that cannot shoot a three. And a bad coach. Joel Embiid. Also, he's very good at throwing out zingers, just like Genie did.
The one-liners. I would love to see Joel Embiid as Genie.
And, I mean, I've seen a number of pictures of him shirtless. All right. Give me another real quick. Give me another NBA Disney character.
I feel like this was a layup based on physical appearance. I've got Boban. Bogdanovich, the large 7-foot player who has also a large face. I have him as the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Are you a Notre Dame, Notre Dame person?
It's Notre Dame, I think, the movie, but Notre Dame is the name of the football team or the name of the school.
So they're both physical freaks, whether it comes to their looks or what they can do on the court. And at one point, Boban, I think, was the most efficient basketball player in the NBA based off minutes, because he was getting like rebounds, assists, points, steals, blocks, the whole nine yards. And Quasimodo does a lot of that too, with ringing the bells, making sure the gypsies aren't too close to the tower. He also had a lot of things that wouldn't show up on his stat sheet.
Three more I have here to knock out. Andrew calls at 777-1600. I don't want to forget about those. Steph Curry's Peter Pan, because he still has a lot of little boy in him. He doesn't really want to grow up. You know, I don't know when Steph Curry's going to look like a man, act like a man, play like a man. I don't know. He's Peter Pan. Let's go to the phones really quickly. Who has a nomination here?
You have got Doug right now.
Oh,
with
Doug. Doug has one for Zion Williamson. What do you got, Doug?
Josh, he's your boy. I mean, it's a natural. Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah! I like that. Do you want to explain why it fits?
Yeah, he doesn't need wings. He just, it's like to infinity and beyond. He just has his own jet built in.
There you go, Doug. Thanks for the phone call. Brent writes in, does this deserve a bell or an X? Nikola Jokic is Sully from Monsters, Inc.
100%. We talked about this earlier. A large man who's doing his best to support this team, to keep this scream industry up. I love it.
How do you feel about this one? Kyrie Irving is Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Only if you do the voice.
The earth is flat.
I'm not happy being on a team with LeBron.
I know we won a title, and I hit a really big shot, but I want to go to Boston, and now I want to make an Uncle Drew movie and go to Brooklyn.
Is that movie not out yet? I thought it was already
That out. Movie's been out for a long time.
Have you seen it?
It didn't really have good ratings. The box office wasn't that good.
He's definitely Eeyore.
I don't think we should play in the bubble. Last one I have here. Jimmy Butler is Hades from Hercules.
I can see it. He can get hot from time to time.
And on top of that, he works the mouth out quite a bit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he can dish it out. He gets really hot, streaky shooter, plays for the Heat. So
he's also always got something to say, you know. Like you said, running his mouth.
Hades is Jimmy Butler.
I like that. I think we knocked this out of the park.
Let me see some of these other ones on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Roy Hibbert is Eeyore, not Kyrie.
Roy Hibbert isn't
it. Is Roy Hibbert still in the league?
I don't think so.
Last I saw Roy Hibbert,
he was on the Warriors.
He was on the Kobe Lakers team that last year. That's the last I remember seeing Roy Hibbert in the NBA. He played for the Lakers.
His last place.
He never played for Golden State.
Yeah, you're right. It was the Nuggets.
Oh, he was also a Hornet, too. How could I forget about that?
He's a coach on the 76ers in charge of player development currently.
Yeah, that's the guy I want teaching Joel Embiid.
All right,
Ben. The way to go.
Just take it up from the three.
Nope. Don't take a three, Ben. You're not going to make it. Larry Sorensen was a Major League Baseball All-Star.
I thought you were going to compare him to a Disney character.
Mickey Mouse.
There you go.
That's Larry Sorensen. That's how I feel about that guy. I'm not going to do this read in Mickey Mouse's voice.
Why not? Why would you not do it?
I don't think that's what people want. Actually, I know that's what people want.
You don't know what we want, Josh. Just read it.
How about I just give you room to do what you just did there at the end? In between this tease here. How about I do that? In a 60-game season, what kind of big league teams are going to benefit?
When are you going to tell me, Josh?
Now you're improvising. Great. We'll discuss that with Wake Forest football color analyst Larry Sorensen and talk a lot of ball as well next on The Drive.
Here comes the life of the party.
The Drive.
Corrupting the minds and the hearts of our children.
With Josh Graham.
Program for low expectations.
On Sports Hub Triad. Woo!
We are now being joined by Wake Forest color commentator, former Major League Baseball All-Star Larry Sorensen. And I want to get more stories out of you from particularly minor league baseball days, because I think those stories are best. You told us how you got a Bull Durham style rainout once upon a time. Ryan McGee really brought it earlier in the show, where he told us about the time where he was dragged to a bar late at night when they were honoring a bunch of all-stars from, I think, the Atlantic League way back when, and Minnie Minoso was sitting there at the bar, and he had way too many drinks. Robert, I don't know what kind of drink he was going for, but I think the way Ryan McGee put it was, I don't know how much rum the town of Hickory was looking to sell that night, but the contents of all of the rum in the city was in Minnie Minoso's stomach that night. He was like passed out at the bar. That was a fun story, so maybe we can visit that in just a bit. But I just want some baseball analysis now that we know the season's going to start this week, Thursday night. Dr. Anthony Fauci going to throw the first ball out for the world champion Nationals. What teams, given the fact that it's only 60 games, given that a lot of it's going to be condensed to fit it all in before the playoffs in October, what types of teams do you think will benefit most from the way this season looks?
I think the teams that kept their... And how you doing, Josh? Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
I think the teams whose pitchers prepared themselves ready to have the season start immediately are going to be the ones that that get hot, because it always takes the hitters a little bit to catch up. And I think that since it was a shortened time, the guys that are going to have the pitching staffs that are a little bit further ahead, and this is nothing new, but they'll be the ones that'll hit the chute. The interesting thing is everybody believes they've got a shot. I was talking with a major league pitcher from the Pirates the other day, and he said, hey, we come out hot, we're right there, and it ends. You know, so there, and that I see some of the things the Tigers are saying. And so everybody believes that with only 2 months to play, anything can happen.
Do you think with the way that pitchers are generally ahead of hitters, this nightmare scenario that baseball purists are bringing up, hey, in 60 games, what if somebody hits 400? Will they even acknowledge it? Is that something you think is even possible?
I do think it's possible, and that's a number that is a, you know, very revered record for stats guys, and it would be, I think you got to put an asterisk by that if it happens, just because it's not over the usual period of time, and it's just an abnormal situation with everything we do, and I don't think that you can generalize and classify everything under one umbrella. I think you've got to take things individually.
All right. I'm interested. If the rainout story is one of the best you got, give me another example of a good minor league baseball story. Larry Sorensen with us, by the way. I'm sure you're stocked full of them.
Well, you know what? Minor league stuff, not really, because I was less than a year in the minor leagues. I was 6 weeks in rookie ball and then about a month in double A at the end of the same season, and then about 12 starts in triple A, and I was in the big leagues.
Wow.
But I do remember, I'll tell you, at the end of my career, when I was on the way down, you know, it was a year on the way up and a year on the way down, just about the same way. But we were in Albuquerque, and we had a rain out, and there was a big sports bar, and I was with the Giants organization in AAA. And there was the Phoenix Firebirds. So we were in a bar in Albuquerque, about 10 or 12 of us, and we got the bar owner to turn, there was nobody else in the place, we got the bar owner to turn the satellite dish onto the Giants game, and we're watching the Giants, and a pitcher got hurt, and everybody turned and looked at me, and this is, you know, this is 12:30 at night, right? So it'd been a long night, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was kind of Minnie Minoso. Everybody was kind of Minnie Minoso like at that point. So a pitcher gets hurt and goes down. And everybody turns and looks at me and says, you're going to the big leagues tomorrow. And I said, yeah, right. And sure enough, about 15 minutes later, the telephone rings and it's Wendell Kim, our manager. And the bartender says, is there a Larry Sorensen in here? And everybody pushed me to the phone. Hey, Wendell, how you doing? You know, you're going to the big leagues tomorrow morning. You got a 7 o'clock flight. You know,
what do you remember about that flight?
It wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty because all my stuff was at a condo in Phoenix. And, you know, so you got to make arrangements to get all that stuff shipped to you. And the way that I joined the Giants was a little bit odd. I was out of baseball for about 3 months or so. I'd had a quick stint in Double A with the Reds and decided to retire in May and went home. And in July, they called me and the Giants called and said, "Have you been throwing? Are you ready to go?" I said, "Oh, I've been throwing every day. I didn't even know where my equipment was. I hadn't touched it. We were moving to Detroit. All my stuff was on a van, on a moving van. And I'd have Mike Kruko mail overnight me a glove and some shoes and stuff so that I could play when I got to Phoenix."
That's tremendous.
Yeah.
He's on Twitter.
Good times.
At Larry with one R, Sorensen. Since we are supposed to be playing football in a little less than a month and a half, I'm just interested in your general confidence level based on what you're reading that football is going to start on time. Ed Orgeron, he said over the weekend to Ryan McGee that he is absolutely confident there's going to be football, but he doesn't know how many games or when that's going to be. It seems to be a lot of smart people I rely on in football believing that they're going to either shorten the season or push things back. Where are you at right now?
Well, you know, with some of the smaller conferences already having said that they're not going to play, it takes games off the schedule. So just my own personal opinion, I'd be pretty surprised if they got those early non-conference games in against the Old Dominions and schools like that, because I just think that there's too many variables still to be found out in the next 2 months about what exactly is going to happen with the schools and students themselves. I don't see how they can not have students on campus and still expect the student-athletes to participate in games on the weekend if you're not going to have students taking classes in the buildings. That doesn't seem to make sense, just again, my personal opinion. But I think there's just so many variables about what's going to happen in all parts of the country to really make a prediction. What I'm hearing is that the end of this month is when they want to try to make some kind of a decision about the ACC.
Yeah, and it looks like that's going to happen in the next week or so. So the next time we chat, we'll know more, and hopefully we're talking about football sometime soon. Thanks for the stories. Thanks for the time, Larry. It's good to hear your voice. Appreciate you doing that.
Always a pleasure, Josh, anytime.
There you go. That's Larry Sorensen from the Wake Forest. Got to figure out the right way to say this. Wake Forest Learfield IMG Sports Network. Wake Forest football color commentator and Major League Baseball all-star way back when.